It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Parents insist more than 230 Nigerian schoolgirls were abducted last week. The UN charges South Sudanese rebels with mass murder. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The parents of Nigerian schoolgirls abducted last week by Islamist extremists in Borno State say 234 girls are missing, a much higher figure than authorities have given. Authorities said 129 were kidnapped last week. The discrepancy is the latest confusion surrounding those kidnappings. Last week, Nigeria's military said almost all the abducted girls have been rescued, but retracted the statement the next day. There have been no claims of responsibility. However, they are believed to have been carried out by the Islamist extremist group Boko Haram. Well, last week's abductions were carried out on the same day a bomb blast went off in the Nigerian capital Abuja, killing 75. Boko Haram has claimed responsibility for that attack. Here is reporter Ann Look.
In his new video, Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau waved a stick and addressed Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan. "You are just too small," he says. "You are just too small for us." Shekau taunted Nigerian authorities who have repeatedly pledged to put down the now five-year-old insurgency in a matter of months. The Nyanya bus station bombing was Boko Haram's first major attack in the capital in 2 years, something analysts say show its capabilities remain intact, despite the almost year-long military offensive against the rebels. Most of Boko Haram's attacks take place in the far northeast. Analysts also say the size and sophistication of the blast suggests the militants have strengthened their connections abroad. Three northeastern states have been under a state of emergency for almost a year, but the violence has intensified.
Well, Nigeria is afraid. Nigeria is scared. The security said they are in control. But from the look of things, I doubt if they are.
Amnesty International says 1,500 people have been killed this year in the conflict between Boko Haram insurgents and the Nigerian security forces, more than half of them civilians. Ann Look, VOA News, Dakar.
The United Nations has accused rebels in South Sudan of killing hundreds in a small town based on their nationality or ethnic origin. The UN mission in South Sudan says the slayings occurred in Benchu, capital of Unity State, after rebel forces seized the town from government troops April 15. Joseph Contreras is a UN spokesman.
Several men, women, and children believed to be of Nuer ethnicity were killed for hiding and declined to join fellow Nuers who had gone out to welcome the opposition forces as they came into the town of Benchu. And at that same hospital, individuals from other South Sudanese ethnic groups, as well as people from the Sudanese region of Darfur, were specifically targeted and killed.
The mission says the rebels killed more than 200, wounded hundreds of others at a local mosque where hundreds had taken shelter to escape fighting. It says the rebels, known as the SPLA in opposition, escorted people of certain nationalities and ethnic groups to safety before killing the others. A rebel spokesman told VOA, meanwhile, the rebels have captured another town in the region, Mayom. The UN mission in South Sudan confirmed there is fighting around the town, but did not confirm it was controlled by rebels. A member of Somalia's parliament has been killed by a car bomb in Mogadishu. Isaac Mohamed Ibrahim killed when a bomb concealed in his vehicle exploded in the capital's Hamar Wayne district. Another lawmaker, Mohamed Abdi, was wounded. The Somali militant group al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for that attack. The Somalian army recently marked its 54th anniversary after its disintegration with the collapse of the central government in 1991. A number of militia groups were integrated into the army with training by U.S. and European Union personnel. President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed urged soldiers to seize the chance to write a new chapter in the army's history. He spoke of the long history of the Somali army and their stature in society. Today, he says, there is a second chance to make history in rebuilding the army. The SNA, as it's called, is plagued by poor wages and antiquated equipment. The army is believed to number some 10,000, but remains split among clan loyalties and links to militia groups. Mauritania on Monday announced its next presidential election will be held June 21st with a second round runoff, if needed, to be held July 5th. President Mohamed Ould Abdelaziz has not yet indicated his intention to seek re-election. His party, the Union of the Republic, secured a majority of seats in last year's parliamentary elections, boycotted by most of the opposition. Mr. Aziz, a former general, came to power in 2008 in a coup, won election the following year. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News. More can be found at our internet website, voanews.com.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Batte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan rebels deny UN claims of ethnic and nationality killings.
It's not true. Our forces did not target any civilians, whether from Sudan or from the people of South Sudan.
James Gaudet is spokesman for rebels' ally to former South Sudan Vice President Riek Machar. We will hear from the spokesman of the UN mission in South Sudan on the alleged killings. More Muslims flee violence in the Central African Republic capital. And Uganda's opposition members of parliament demand an official investigation of the country's Inspector General of Police.
We, as the opposition in Uganda, are going to move a motion that the person of the Inspector General of Police be investigated with a view to recommend his own eventual removal and replacement.
Muwanga Kivumbi Muhammad is a leading opposition member of the Uganda Parliament. And the British think tank Charlton Howells urges the West to re-engage Zimbabwe and an end to all sanctions. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, has accused rebels of killing hundreds of civilians based in ethnic and nationality after seizing the town of Bentiu last week. The mission says the rebels killed more than 200 civilians and wounded more than 400 at Bentiu's Kalibele Mosque, where hundreds of people had taken shelter to escape fighting.
Several men, women, and children believed to be of Nuer ethnicity were killed for hiding and declined to join fellow Nuers who had gone out to welcome the opposition forces as they came into the town of Bentiu. And at that same hospital, individuals from other South Sudanese ethnic groups, as well as people from the Sudanese region of Darfur, were specifically targeted and killed. On that same day, opposition forces entered a mosque where civilians had taken shelter, separated individuals gathered there on the basis of nationality and ethnic group, and then escorted some to safety and killed others. At the mosque, more than 200 civilians were reportedly murdered, and over 400 were wounded. At the Catholic Church and at a compound belonging to the World Food Program, which has been recently vacated, opposition soldiers also asked civilians who had taken refuge there to identify themselves by nationality and ethnic origin and proceeded to target and kill several individuals. So my reading of this press statement would indicate that opposition forces, as well as elements who are sympathetic to those opposition forces, led by the foreign vice president, Riek Machar Tang, allegedly carried out some of these human rights atrocities based on our preliminary reporting.
What is the total number of people killed so far?
We do not have a total number for those civilians killed in Bentiu. The only figures that we can issue at this time, because we did have people on the ground working for the mission and looking into various allegations, are the figures contained in the press release, namely that at the mosque, over 200 were reportedly killed and over 400 wounded at that house of worship. I cannot give you a figure for every civilian who might have been caught in crossfire in and around the state capital, nor can I give you a figure for the number of civilians who might have been caught in crossfire at various locations like Mayom Junction, where fighting also took place.
The UN peacekeeping forces are in Bentiu as we speak now. How many people are seeking shelter in your compounds in Bentiu?
Currently, we have approximately 22,000 internally displaced civilians who are being sheltered at our Protection of Civilians site inside the UNMISS base north of Bentiu, up sharply from 4,000 at the beginning of April.
Joseph Contreras is a spokesman for the United Nations mission in South Sudan. He was speaking with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. Rebel spokesman James Gaudet admits his group killed Sudanese rebels belonging to the Justice and Equality Movement in Bentiu. But Gaudet denies that the UN report that rebels are targeting civilians in Bentiu.
This is not true. I believe this is one-sided report or information. we learned that groups of justice and equality movement wrote a letter, an open letter to the United Nations that their civilians were killed, were targeted in Bentiu. This is not true. Our forces did not target any civilian, whether from Sudan or from the people of South Sudan. Some of the people that got killed, who happened to be Sudanese nationals, were members of the Justice and Equality Movement. This is a rebel group from Sudan, but they decided to forget about their cause in Sudan and allow themselves to be used as mercenaries by the government in Juba. We did not kill any civilians. This is unfortunate. If this report came out of the complaint launched by the groups of Sudanese rebels.
They are giving specific instances that are on the 15 and on the 16 that your forces were searching places where people were hiding in. Your group was looking for certain people from certain communities and you were singling them out from civilians and, killing them.
Our forces did not go out to search for members of other communities. What they were doing was to make sure that the town was clear, looking for maybe remnants of the government troops. This is what they were doing. They were not looking for civilians.
And how about the claim that your forces are using Bentiu FM to preach the message of hate against civilians from other communities and other nationalities?
I'm not aware of any hate message, because can they say what particular message they describe as a hate message? I'm not aware of this. What our forces were telling the civilian population was to remain calm, because the town came under full control of our forces. So they were telling residents in town and its surroundings to remain calm. There was no hate message.
James Gadet is the spokesman for Rebels Allied with former South Sudan Vice President Riek Machar. He was speaking with John Tanza of VOA's South Sudan In Focus program. Nearly 100 Muslims fleeing violence in the Central African Republic capital arrived in Bambari on Monday, 383 kilometers from the capital, Bangui. The men, women and children spent a day on the road to escape the daily attacks that threatened their lives in Bangui's PK-12 neighborhood, according to the International Organization for Migration, which organized the convoy. The IOM's chief of mission, Giuseppe Loprete, talked to Ricky Stryak about the ongoing intercommunal violence in the country and the continued flight of Muslims from Bangui's PK-12 neighborhood.
It was a convoy with two trucks, with 93 people escorted by Sangarese. These are stranded people in PK-12. They've been there for the last 4 months since December. So only now, finally, we managed to take them to a destination that they select. They told us that they want to go back to Bambari. The situation is not sustainable in PK-12 because physical protection cannot be guaranteed. And this group is attacked almost on a daily basis. So there have been several people killed over the last few weeks. It's really a situation that is difficult to handle, and they could not stay any longer.
For someone unfamiliar with the situation in CAR, who are they under attack from?
Well, this population is a Muslim minority. They are surrounded and attacked by these anti-Balaka groups, the militia. So they couldn't move. They couldn't go out. They are trapped. They're surrounded. If it's not on a daily basis, almost there are grenade attack. They are shot. They are killed if they leave the area. This is the situation they live every day.
While displacement is obviously not an ideal solution, are there any advantages to this type of internal displacement in comparison to those people who have fled the country to Cameroon or Chad?
It's actually not a long-term solution. We hope that they will return at some point, they will come back. So, but for now, they are better off for sure in Bambari.
What kind of challenges might these people face now that they're in Bambari?
The challenge, of course, they have to be reintegrated or integrated in the, they will be hosted by families. There will be humanitarian support also for them in Bambari. UNHCR is there, OCHA is there. At least they are in an area, in a location where they can be assisted. PK-12, right now it's impossible to provide assistance. Like, it's very difficult even to bring their food. We hope that the community will not be destabilized, but I don't think so, personally, because it's just a small group, like less than 100 people, and there was a lot of preparation before the movement. But we'll continue to monitor the situation.
Could you tell me about future internal displacement convoys that IOM has organized for Muslims who are still remaining in Bangui?
We are focused on PK12 right now. So we still have 1,000 people that are willing to go to Moyan Sido and about 250 people that are willing to go to Cabo in the north. So we are trying to organize this next movement. It will be it will be a big challenge. A longer convoy, it will require a lot of preparation. So this is the plan. We don't know if and when we can actually relocate them. We hope to do it as soon as possible, but as I said, it will require a lot of preparatory work, including consultation with the government and coordination with all the partners.
Giuseppe Loprete is the chief of mission for the International Organization for Migration. He spoke with Ricky Shryak from Bangui. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bate, Washington. Today is Tuesday, April 22nd. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout-out to listeners on these, our VOA affiliate stations, Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, Brela FM in Nigeria, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya, and Radio Hot Cocoa in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. A member of Uganda's Parliamentary Committee on Defense and Internal Affairs says he plans to move a motion this week to demand an official investigation of Kale Kayihura, the country's Inspector General of Police. The motion will accuse Kayihura of abuse of office, unprofessionalism, and a display of public support for the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement. Muwanga Kivumbi Mohamed tells reporter Peter Clotty that opposition legislators have gathered evidence that supports their allegations that the Inspector General of Police has on several occasions publicly advocated for President Yoweri Museveni's ruling National Resistance Movement and has demonstrated bias against opposition and civil society groups.
So far, all evidence, recorded tapes, his conduct in the public, his conduct in the private, there is evidence written all over the world that he is not only partisan, but he conducts himself more as a cadre of the ruling party and as a work for a person of President Yoweri Museveni, which we believe and we think and it's against the police act, it's against the Constitution of the Republic of Uganda, and his behavior and conduct in that regard is an becoming of a person of the Inspector General of Police. That's why this week we as the opposition in Uganda are going to move a motion that his, the person of the Inspector General of Police, be investigated with a view to recommend his own eventual removal and replacement.
Anybody at all can make allegations against a public officer, including the Inspector General of Police. What proof do you have?
Yes, yes. For those who are now in the modern age of technology, can watch YouTube, can watch Twitter, can watch Facebook, they are aware of the horrific conduct of the Inspector General of Police. Where is the scene? Working with opposition politicians, convincing them to join the ruling party, to support President Yoweri Museveni, to give out money. He conducted himself in such a manner and he participated in those partisan activities. That's the whole basis. It's self-evident.
Are you going to present the evidence that you have accrued?
That's why we took off time and we never hurried. And we've been doing our thorough work. And the evidence we have assembled is impeccable and self-evident. And there is no way he can walk away. It's so thorough that even the devil will have to believe it.
But some people are saying that the opposition appears to be launching this criticisms against the Inspector General of Police when all he has been doing is doing his work well as mandated under the Constitution, and that this is yet another attempt by opposition leaders in the country to force him out after opposition leaders demanded his resignation recently.
Not really. He's been an inspector general of police, I think, for a couple of years, close to 7, 8. So he's been at it for a long time. We've not demanded so before. But now his behavior has become untenable. It's quite aberrant from the conduct of a professional police person all over the world. We have a constitution, we have a police act, we have police regulations. They must be seen and they must be enforced.
Mwanga Kivumbi Mohammed is a leading member of Uganda's Parliamentary Committee on Defense and Internal Affairs. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. The British think tank Chatham House has released a report urging the West to re-engage Zimbabwe and not to wait for a change in leadership in the country, in particular President Robert Mugabe's successor. In a report released on Monday, the group calls for an end to all targeted sanctions and all other measures, as well as a pragmatic dialogue that recognizes mutual interest and responsibility. The report urges Zimbabwe to improve its human rights record and reform electoral laws that have been the source of friction between the ruling ZANU-PF and opposition parties. Political analyst and director of the Zimbabwe Media Center, Ernest Muzingi, says Zimbabwe has no option but to re-engage.
I don't think the way history should wait. In fact, it should re-engage for, among other things, democracy to be restored in Zimbabwe. So restoring democracy must take place under the current government. It may need to wait for another government because another government may never come. It can happen. So the engagement should be based on this government embracing democratic reforms that, if the people of Zimbabwe so wish, can then result in a new government.
But do you think the Zimbabwe government is ready to re-engage the West, judging from what has happened ever since Mr. Mugabe was sworn in?
Yeah, I think this government is only ready to engage on its own terms. It is not ready to engage on a condition of fully embracing reforms, political and economic reforms that can result in a democracy and a genuinely free market economic system.
Ernest Muzangi is a Zimbabwe political analyst. He was speaking with Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe program. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma reporting from Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with athletics. Kenyan defending champion Rita Jepto clocked a lifetime best of 2 hours, 18 minutes and 57 seconds to establish a new women's course record at the Boston Marathon in Massachusetts State, United States of America, on Monday. This is her third victory in Boston, having first won the event in 2006. Jepto is now the 5th fastest female marathon runner of all time. Ethiopians Deba Bizunesh and Mare Dibaba followed her across the finish line. Meanwhile, 39-year-old Eritrean-born Mebratom Keflezighi of the United States of America clinched the men's title in a lifetime best of 2 hours, 8 minutes and 37 seconds. Kenyans Wilson Chebet and Franklin Chepkwony placed second and third, respectively. In China, Kenyan world champion Gladys Cherono and Eritrean Nguse Amlosom each set course records en route to their triumph at the Jianzhen International Half Marathon in Yangzhou on Sunday. Cherono covered the distance in 1 hour, 8 minutes and 16 seconds, as Amlosom, who was fifth at the recent world championships, clocked 1 hour and 8 seconds. In weightlifting, hosts Tunisia amassed 7 gold, 5 silver and 2 bronze medals to top the medal table in both the boys and girls contests at the Africa Junior Weightlifting Championships in the capital, Tunis. Egypt is second ahead of South Africa. Morocco are fourth, followed by Algeria and Libya. The contest was also a qualifier for Africa to the World Youth Olympics in China later this year. In football news, Gambia is disqualified from the African Under-20 Championship qualifiers for fielding five overaged players in their 1-0 triumph over Liberia on the 6th of April, the Confederation of African Football disclosed in Cairo, Egypt on Monday. Consequently, CAF confirms Liberia is through to the next stage of the qualifiers. Finally, Italian Mariano Berretto is set to be named Ethiopian national football coach, the Ethiopian Football Federation revealed in Addis Ababa on Monday. He's expected to guide Ethiopia in the qualifying for the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations in Morocco. The draws for the qualifiers take place in Cairo, Egypt next weekend. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day. Our listener mail for this Tuesday morning comes from Oyakamo Abubakar of Lagos, Nigeria. He says, "Dear VOA, I've been listening to your station since 1960. I've observed that listeners' comments on your program from Nigeria are usually from the South and Northeast geopolitical zones. These comments most often negate the old adage which says, 'Charity begins at home.' For the record, the two zones are dens of the absurd. Acts of criminality, armed robbery, ritual killing, modern-day slavery, kidnapping, cattle rustling, Boko Haramism, drug peddling, etc. are their stock in trade. They should first correct the ills in their zones before pointing fingers of contempt at others." Thank you, Oyakamo Abubakar of Lagos, Nigeria, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us a message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United Nations has accused rebels in South Sudan of killing hundreds of people in a small town based on their nationality or ethnic origin. The UN mission in South Sudan says the slayings took place in Bentiu after rebel forces seized the town from government troops on April 15. The mission says the rebels killed more than 200 and wounded more than 400 civilians at a local mosque where hundreds of people had taken shelter to escape the fighting. It says the rebels, known as the SPLA in opposition, escorted people of certain nationalities and ethnic groups to safety before killing the others. There was no immediate comment on the report from the rebels or South Sudan's government. The parents of Nigerian schoolgirls who were abducted last week by Islamist extremists say 234 girls are still missing, a much higher figure than authorities have given. On Monday, the parents said they have been working on compiling a complete registry of all the girls who were abducted from the Chibok Secondary School in the country's northeast. Authorities have said 129 girls were kidnapped last week. They say 52 of them later escaped, leaving 77 still unaccounted for. And a member of Somalia's parliament has been killed by a car bomb in Mogadishu. That's it for this Tuesday, April 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on The Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Jackson Vunganyi, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Strike, as well as post editor Mark Ullman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everybody in Africa a very good day.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing. So definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at UpfrontAfrica.